This Time of Dying, written by Raina James and read by Cornelius Garrett.
Part 1. The disease simply had its way. It came like a thief in the night and stole treasure. Ministry of Health report on the pandemic of influenza, 1918 to 19. Monday, the 14th of October, 1918. Thomas Way got dressed very slowly, feeling for his buttons and doing them up without looking down at his shirt front. The trousers were more difficult, but he sat on the edge of the bed and pulled them on, squinting slightly as his head was pulled forward by the motion of his arms. He left the waistcoat and tie on the chair and spent several minutes getting into his coat, stopping often to rest. Dressed, he was too hot. The pain was wobbling towards the front of his face and down into his teeth so that every movement was a shock, even though he planned it carefully and did nothing to surprise himself. His first objective was to reach the table where he put the letter. Fixing his eyes on the envelope's white rectangle, he put his left hand on his temple and used his right to guide him on a path that allowed him to rest on various pieces of furniture. A cough, excited by movement, halted him, but he finally achieved the table and leaned on it for a minute, touching the letter with his forefinger. He thought he would fall, but the strength remaining in his arms held him up while his legs swayed and twitched. A sharp pain in his chest was beginning to interfere with his breathing, letting him inhale, but only to a certain depth. The cough was producing a rusty orange phlegm that made him retch. By the time he reached the front door, he was barely conscious, sliding down the railing to the pavement and then flopping onto the gate as he tried to locate himself. He could see the postbox, a red fleck in the distance. As he turned to it, the space in his lungs diminished further. He was drowning, and there was nothing in his field of view but the hard grey stone of the street. I was working in the window, sanding down a lid when this little lad came running up and banged on the glass, shouting, "There's a blue man in the road!" I didn't understand him at first, but I could see a crowd beginning to gather, so I went out to have a look. When they saw me, they stood away. That often happens wherever the body is. There's a parting and a standing back. The boy followed me through the crowd. He pointed down at the man who was lying half on the pavement and half in the road. "Look, he's blue!" And yes, he was. His lips and ears were purple-blue, like a plum, and the skin on his face was mottled and pale, but still tinged with blue, as if he'd been wiped with an inky rag. He was 35 or thereabouts and wore no shoes or socks. He had no hat that I could see, either on his head or off. His left hand was half under him, with a bit of paper poking out, but the other was lying across his chest. So I took his wrist and felt for a pulse, more for the sake of the crowd than anything. He was obviously dead. The traffic was building up by then, people honking and shouting, so a couple of us lifted him up and took him into my workshop. I was alone that morning, Walter and Albert having gone off with a coffin for a woman who died the night before. We put the man on one of the benches, and I sent the boy to get Frank, the local sergeant. Then I cleared everybody out and waited. I don't like to touch anything when I'm on my own like that, in case there's money and so forth. I stood away, but I couldn't keep from looking. That was unusual. I never look as a rule. Why would I? We must have been there a full 5 minutes until Frank came in and made a racket, banging the door shut and whistling. The dead man had dressed all wrong. Buttons skew-whiff, no tie, bare feet. The clothes were all good quality, so he had money, or he'd had some in the past. His hair was a bit long and his nails were dirty, but he seemed clean enough. Without undressing him, we couldn't be sure if he'd been sent home wounded from the front. There was nothing in any of his pockets to help us out, only a few coins and a key in his coat, and a bloody handkerchief in his trousers, nothing with a name on or an address.